if somebody talks on the train these days, it's just like, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Shush, yeah.
I'm scrolling.
I'm scrolling my black scroll.
I'll tell you
of
what
death.
I did do though. I test drove a Cybertruck.
Oh my lord. How was that?
0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds. Yeah. You click it.
And what does it weigh? Like 3 tons?
It's so much bigger than you think it is, first of all. So you go into beast mode setting.
Of course you do.
And it's totally, it feels like a roller coaster. You know those roller coasters when you sit in?
Yeah.
And they're like the accelerator or whatever. Oof. And your stomach.
Yeah.
It feels like that when you accelerate.
Wow.
And the other weird thing is the steering wheel. It's not on a steering column, it's wireless, which is why you can't have them in Europe. Yeah. But when you turn the wheel, it turns both sets of wheels.
Yeah.
Rear wheel drive.
Yeah, yeah.
So four-wheel drive.
Turn left. Four so obviously steer. The wheels do that. And then in the rear ones do that. So it's got a brilliant turning circle.
Amazing.
I mean,
a friend of mine's wife thought that's all cars did that.
Really?
Yeah, she just didn't ever.
Very good, but it was a great holiday. It was amazing.
Oh, very good.
California but, dreaming.
So I was just trying to work this out. So if a Cybertruck does 0 to 60, that's not quite a steam catapult on a aircraft carrier kind of. You know what they launch planes off aircraft carriers? Yeah.
Not quite that.
It's up there.
But
right?
it is. I mean, you'd accelerate quicker than most sports cars off the lights.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's instant as well, isn't it? Because it's electric. Yeah. But they are. They're colossal. But the thing, like all of us, inflation is a big problem.
Yeah.
Everyone, they're all noticing how expensive everything is. But they're just going about their daily. They're just full of confidence.
Sure. That is the biggest difference between Americans.
But the other thing is confidence. You know, they've got 30-year mortgages.
Yeah.
Fixed rate mortgages. Yes, you can't port them if you move. But none of them pay the debt off. They all say, why would I do that when I can put it in the equity market? Yeah. So they all invest in equities.
Yeah.
It's and they all talk about stocks.
Yeah. Yeah.
John will raise his eyebrow and go, it's a sign of the bubble,
no,
blah, blah, blah,
no,
blah.
It's just
who they are.
Mindset change.
I was there, I felt very positive. And then
although here there's more chat about asset classes.
Agreed.
And stuff like gold chat and all of that, right? And Bitcoin.
That's
right.
Well. Yeah.
So. It's the S&P all the way for them, isn't it?
I guess so.
Why would you not buy the best?
Haven't they just introduced
that
Invest America scheme?
They've copied it from us because we had the old child trust funds 25 years ago, but we kind of bungled it because
it's £1,000 per child under two.
Going
into the S&P.
That's going to be invested, and in a tax exempt account, effectively a junior.
And I think that's something we don't talk about enough. Is there's something like $1.6 trillion a year going into US equities from 401ks.
Australian superannuation.
Yeah. Correct. So every month there's a massive net buyer. Mm. And I think when we talk about sell-offs and the rest of it, I do think sometimes we don't think about that. The biggest buyer in the market is always there every month.
Net flow, yeah.
Well, we have it here with auto-enrollment, just probably not to the same degree. And of course, all the funds that are invested into sort of lifestyling funds, aren't they? So we don't really know where that money is going for most people. We do have the same here. But the other thing...
But most of it's going to US equity still.
Yeah, but we've also got de-equitization in a sense, haven't we? Because there are more buybacks on a net basis than there is equity issuance. Ben, is that... I think that's right, roughly.
Yeah.
Has been right for a long time.
Yeah.
So you know, from a pure supply and demand standpoint, there is more demand for equities than there are supply of equities. Yeah.
And probably more demand than there's ever been.
Yeah.
But I think the difference is the culture. You know what I mean? That's the point.
Massively culture, yeah.
Yeah. People are very engaged in the stock market.
But and,
you know, you get people who are interested in the FTSE and stuff like that, but you very rarely get people engaged in global markets to quite the same extent, I think.
I think maybe the NVIDIAs and the Teslas and the Amazons in the UK are probably changing that to an extent, but by nowhere near enough. We don't have enough education. We don't have enough information or data in the UK.
Yeah.
And it's a mindset, cultural thing as well, isn't it?
I think also it's easier to invest when you know what you're investing in, i.e. you own a pair of Nikes. Now you want to buy Nike stock. Or
you watch Netflix.
Yeah.
You watch Netflix or your Apple iPhone. I mean, everyone in the US owns Apple.
Yeah.
And they all say they've owned it. years and years and years because they saw what was happening just with iPhone usage.
I mean, that is a slightly tangential thing, that the Mac 7, although it creates huge market concentration, at least it's seven names that people have heard of and they know what they do.
But also it's across multiple sectors as well.
So it helps that narrative, right?
Yeah.
It also helps that narrative that because we talk a lot about the difference between UK economy and the FTSE and the US economy and the S&P 500, right? You know, you're not necessarily investing in the US economy or the UK economy. And that sort of helps that because very obviously Netflix is a global company.
Yeah. And we might discuss it. Well, we're not going to discuss it actually, but the Warren Buffett indicator, the market cap to GDP, you're comparing a US stock market that was predominantly US focused, whereas now the US stock market is 40% international profits. So why should the value of the US stock market be compared to US GDP? But anyway, that's just I'm just going to leave that there.
I mean, you go up against the Sage of Omaha, it's fine. I mean, I'll leave you to it.
So you're selling everything? You're raising cash as well, a la Buffett?
No.
No? Okay.
I'm not even going to be drawn on Warren Buffett.
No? Good. Right.
Basically, Charlie Munger's the smart one.
Yeah, well, Charlie Munger's the one who got Buffett to buy quality at a reasonable price, as opposed to...
Cigar bouts.
Yeah. Wow. The classic value plays. How are you for time, Ben?
I'm all right. I've got till 4.
Okay. Uzi, you all right for time?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I've got to get home to pick the kids up tonight. Hopefully, Great Western Railway don't go on strike or turn up for work. Right. Good to go, Alex? Yeah. Good. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Taking Stock After the Bell, episode 57, I think, is that? 57? What have we been doing? Delighted, as ever, to be joined by James Hughes.
Hello.
Fresh back from his trip to California with two small children. Very brave. He's broke, so he's definitely busy at his desk. Also joined by technology analyst Ben Barringer. Repeat appearance. Number four, perhaps.
Three, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Sorry for the slightly long intro on all that, but lots going on. And it's the end of earnings season, isn't it, where companies report quarterly results. And as we were sort of alluding to, the US stock market is the driver of global markets. A lot of the big tech stocks are the driver of the US stock market. And Ben has the joy and pleasure of covering all those. So we thought we'd shoot the breeze, to use that horrible phrase about what, you know, how it all got on. I mean, I would sort of say it's been a good year for stock markets overall. US equity market is up a bit less than the rest of the world, but it still had a decent year, obviously had the setback in April. The last couple of weeks, though, there has been a sort of little bit of a wobble in some of the more speculative, some of the techie names. Do you want to sort of start with that, Ben, and any sort of thoughts on where that's sort of come from, and then we'll sort of morph into earnings?
I mean, yeah, do you want the bubble question? Is that what you want to get? Where you want to start?
We discussed that last time around, and actually we referenced your article on the website, which was good, and we concluded it wasn't a bubble, right? Mm. But we did say that gold was in a bubble.
And then it sold off,
but we won't take credit for that.
One from one. So let's just deal with what's been happening in the sort of short term. So the things that are really on people's minds are the return on investment, all this capex, right?
Correct. Mm.
The big trend from, the big takeaway from the Mag 7 earnings is that 2025 and 2026 capex is going up. And revisions were positive from all the big hyperscalers by about 10%, something like that. Mm. Right? So that means, and this is the number I watched probably the most closely, it's not the only number, obviously. Capex growth for 2026 at the beginning of the year was set to grow at 9%. And at the before
9% over 2025.
Over 2025.
Yeah.
So into 2026, that's right. And at the before earnings, that number had risen through the year to 20%. Mm-hmm. And there was about another 10% extra out of these numbers. So obviously the closer you get to 2026, the more visibility you get.
Yeah,
but typically now CapEx is gonna grow 30%, something like that, right? And the issue is, what is the return on all of that investment, right? So that's one of the big themes. Now, we're early days in terms of return on investment. The big players in cloud computing that can sell AI services to enterprises,
mm-hmm.
those generally have higher returns.
Mm-hmm.
The big digital advertising companies that have been using AI already to improve their service to not only users of, say, Instagram or Facebook, have good returns, but they also give better returns as well to their advertising clients. So what they use this term, return on advertising spend, ROAS.
Right.
So that's important. So look, but there's still a big uncertainty about what those returns are going to be. Mm. The other big question mark that we've had over the quarter is OpenAI is growing up, right? And it is leaving its Microsoft parent, or at least not saying completely goodbye, but it's at least looking for, you know, other options and ways of growing its data center bill. Because remember, with every company that talked about CapEx is talking about shortages, and if they had more compute, they could sell more.
A question for you from a sort of more technical standpoint, is that why if I spend time in ChatGPT, sometimes it A, takes quite a long time to return results, and B, I find sometimes it's a little bit lazy in cutting corners, and I need to prompt it to...
Yeah, I think there's a couple...
shortage of compute the problem there?
Yeah, look, and I think that would be true in Copilot as well,
which is running Microsoft.
Yeah, so there's that. Also, though, you've got to remember that they're still experimenting with the best way to deliver results. So sometimes you'll just get it, it'll just say, searching the web or looking for more answers.
Mm.
Sometimes it'll say, I've come up with two responses. You know, which would you prefer? You know what I mean? So they're still, well, I mean, in internet language, they're A-B testing, right?
Right.
It will give you A and then we'll give you B and you see how you respond.
Okay.
Right? Well, so they're still
from a technological point of view, is Gemini starting to emerge as the leader?
Not in terms of users,
but in terms of quality of
it's very hard data. To say, right? Because they've definitely look, there are so the Google underperformed through the first half of the year, and since the DOJ investigation was concluded and the court case ruled that there were some remedies, but they were largely manageable for Google.
Mm.
Google has gone through a re-rating, that was like September, that was. That is driven partly by the overhang disappearing, partly by if you face an innovator's dilemma, the main thing you should do is innovate and try and really, you know, put the hammer down.
Mm.
So there's been a better reception to Gemini. And it depends what benchmark. The reason I'm avoiding the question is it depends what benchmark you are using and it depends what you're using it for, right?
Yeah.
So if you were doing coding, it appears the current leader in that area is Claude, which is run by Anthropic,
mm-hmm,
right?
Okay.
If you're using Gemini, Gemini's had some success, particularly as it's combined with GCP, so that's Google Compute Platform. So that's been quite powerful. If you look, I think Google said they've got 650 million Gemini users at the moment. That compares to ChatGPT at 800 million, right? So they're not winning the subscriber race or the user race, but they are certainly more competitive. And Google does have that natural gateway that it's the incumbent.
Mm.
But through the history of tech, incumbency is not always an advantage, right? Because you get stodgy and you have that, let's call it arrogance or slowness of an incumbent.
Yeah.
And the natural way in tech, we can name many, many companies that were dominant, Intel, Nokia, IBM, who were dominant and then have been superseded. And probably the only company that's been able to leap or transition is Microsoft, actually, through the time. So Gemini is getting better. It's still hard to say who's going to quote-unquote win. I think there will still be three or four big models for the foreseeable future.
And then that CapEx, some sort of, that actually it's not necessarily the compute that's the problem in the CapEx now, it's the sort of physical building of the buildings and getting the electricity connected up. Is there any merit in that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. The power is a big constraint. Now, it's not just... Power is an interesting topic, right? Because if you are building somewhere where it's constrained, that is difficult. But a grid, I was talking to Phil, our utilities analyst, about this, right? The grid or power generation is about producing power and then distributing it, right? Mm. And so if you're right next to a power station, that's probably quite good. if you're in a state that's got poor distribution, then that's a problem. If you're, I think there were even, I even heard talk the other day of people were building data centers, but they could, they weren't allowed to have power at certain times. You know, we all know that the grid is built for max, and the power can pass production of a nation is built for max utilization plus a bit, right? Actually, the grid doesn't run at that anywhere near like that, that sort of time. So, yeah, it's all about trying to find power. Now, what that power is going to be, could it be nuclear? Could it be traditional sort of gas-fired? Could it be renewable? All of those things are in the mix. Could it be, and this is happening as well, buying old Bitcoin mining sites and converting them into data? So there's a big discovery process happening. Actually, though, you know, what are they going to build? OpenAI is going to build something between 10 and 30 gigawatts. The total US consumption is something like 1,100 gigawatts, something like that. So, so it's that's a small number relative to the overall, but it's still a big number. You know, you talk to a utilities analyst about expecting 4% or 10% power growth. That's a big number.
Because electricity consumption has flatlined for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Generally speaking, in the developed world.
Okay. LED bulbs probably help. But yeah, you're right. So power and then also permitting and things like that are important. And then also, you know, Yarek, our industrials analyst, covers a lot of the companies that do a lot of the transmission and power conversion as
copper
well.
Cables.
Exactly right. All of that stuff. And those are short supply as well. The only thing that's worth saying is that actually power is a relatively small amount of the COGS, the cost of goods sold, of a data center. And so they can afford to, so, and you've seen this, negotiate 10-year deals for these data centers, but at much higher power prices than is the market rate. So it does have an upward, creates an upward bias on power markets.
And then we sort of come back to the more sort of, not quite existential, but probably the more the kind of core issue for me is, is enterprise in general seeing a positive ROI from plugging in the likes of Copilot or ChatGPT or sector-specific AI applications that are out there?
Was it a Harvard study that showed exactly the opposite of that? There was a study about 6 or 8 weeks ago that showed that if you are not careful how you implement it, you don't get very good returns, right? But let's think about the difference between consumer and enterprise. Mm-hmm. It's a very big difference, right?
Totally.
How long does it take you to integrate ChatGPT into your personal life?
Seconds.
About 5 seconds to download it from the app
store. Oh, sorry.
Right? Yeah. How long does it take an enterprise to appraise ChatGPT, for example, make sure it is data compliant, make sure it is compliance compliant, make sure it is, you know, good in terms of legal, how long, and then put it into a process and then potentially make people redundant, and then potentially, you know, write off some other costs and then show a positive ROI on it. You know, that is 3 years, something like that, right? So this is, I'm not trying to defend enterprise adoption. Oh, and also, let's face it, internal IT departments are not about productivity. They are about keeping the lights on. They are about 99.99999% reliability. So it's one of the reasons you'd never, ever see a ARM-based processor in the workplace, right? So ARM-based Windows PCs have been multiple attempts to put them into people's workplaces, but it's never come across because there are about 3% of applications that don't work very well on those PCs.
Okay.
And IT departments do not want the hassle of 3%. Yeah. 3% is a huge number to an IT department. It means they get 100 times more calls than they used to, right? So I'm not... And it's going to start to happen. And one of the most interesting ones, I think, is Amazon in their e-commerce business. They have obviously, they have AWS and there's a big AI initiative in AWS, but they are able to apply a lot of those AI cost-cutting techniques into the retail business and robotics for that matter as well.
But but it sort of feels to me the key for enterprise to make it worthwhile is having an AI sit between all of the software? Because every different company has got lots of different pieces of software that they use, and lots of white collar work is spent moving information from one software suite to another. So if you can get an AI agent that sits in the middle of that and can talk to all of these, now again, come back to your point about adoption, that's a long, long project to adopt, very risky, and probably quite expensive.
Yeah, I mean, the place it's being seen the most in most companies is in coding, right, in software coding. So the numbers vary between 30 and 40% productivity increases. And so what's actually happening is if a coder, and I watch this quite a lot, so that's meaning less job openings for coders, but actually most recent, and generally it was the senior coders, the more experienced ones, that were using it more and seeing the best benefit. But there's actually just been a little uptick in junior coders as well. So the theory being that you keep the same number of coders and just you know, use those developers more. But what they're essentially doing is using three or four different models, getting them to code, and then seeing which gives them the best results, and then testing all the code. And actually, it's creating bottlenecks, because you can imagine there's somebody who has to sort of compliance and sign off on all of this code testing, and it's creating bottlenecks there. And those guys are having to use other AI applications to test it all as well. So if you will, you're probably going to get to a situation where you get one model to write the code, and then you get another model to test the code, right? But there is, again, still huge security and quality issues with that. So that's where lots of companies, you're starting to see it first. And let's face it, if AI is all about data and the quality of your data, the places where the data is best, coding, digital advertising, and so forth, that's going to show up, is my belief, right? And that's why, actually, some of the stocks that have done best in the market have been those stocks that enable companies to either transfer their data into the cloud or get their data estate into a better order. So Snowflake, Datadog, companies like that, right?
And then on the sort of software thing, there's been this sort of theme of AI again is going to eat software companies, and there's been a degree of underperformance from some of the big names in the software space. Do you want to touch a little bit on that and some of your views? And
So there's a number of reasons why software has been underperforming. So I think there's three that we really need to talk about. The first one is this big, you know, huge disruption, which is I'm going to basically get AI to code me a new CRM system. So Salesforce has got a real big problem because people are just going to have to do that. Now, that's, again, for this whole compliance and regulatory and legal perspective, that's probably not going to happen. But does it mean that software can be a little bit, a lot more customizable? Yeah, I think that's probably true. The second and probably slightly more tangible or near-term threat is in terms of seats, right? So typically software is charged on a per-seat model. And if you are saving humans, then you are saving seats. And therefore, how does the software industry deliver value and then charge for that value? And so there's a business model change that's got to happen, because, you know, AI is delivering value. I don't think that's particularly for debate, but it is a thing that the industry's got to try and model. And then the final reason is that the market is looking for companies that are benefiting from AI. And the problem with traditional software companies is you've come sort of post-COVID, there was quite a lot, well, during COVID, there was quite a lot of consumption of software and people were getting things up to date. And now there's a little bit of a slowing. So part of that's macro, part of that's just a little bit of overconsumption. So actually, companies that should be seeing acceleration are not seeing acceleration. They're seeing slight deceleration. And so, you know, very simplistically, what makes a stock work in this market, obviously beat and raise, but that's always the case, is I should be a beneficiary of AI, and I'm seeing a revenue acceleration from it. And lots of traditional software companies haven't, or traditional, I mean, you know, SaaS companies, haven't seen that acceleration, right? It's, you know, stock market's sometimes a very simple machine. Like, is it exposed to the theme, and is it definitely benefiting from the theme?
We talked about earlier in the year, sort of when the hyperscalers might stop spending, and what would make them stop spending. And we sort of said it comes back to shareholders and return on investment. And we thought that might happen around now, around third quarter or fourth quarter results. And we sort of seem to have rolled through that a bit. Do you think there's been enough evidence that it is worth continuing to invest in the same CapEx based on return on investment? Or do you think we've just got a bit, I don't know, excitable about the
thing? I don't think there's enough evidence at the moment. No. I think there is on a consumer basis, but I don't think there's on an enterprise basis. But then you've also into the mix had sovereign AI as well, right? So that's the UEA, the US with Stargate, lots of other nations looking to build data centers as well. So that sort of, if you will, elongated it. Now,
when do we need to see that coming through before it becomes a problem, do you think?
It's always difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, at the moment...
It's a difficult question.
No, of course. And I'm going to try and answer. I'm going to try and answer it, but it is a difficult question. You know, stock markets have got good momentum. Interest rates are falling. Yeah. Growth from these areas is very strong. And so you feel like you're on a bit of a, a fast-moving train. And maybe it's going to, quote-unquote, crash. Mm. Or maybe it's just going to slow down a little bit and everyone's going to be happy with that. You know? So to go back to, sort of CapEx, I was spent all of 2025 pretty much boring you guys about 2026 CapEx. And now I'm starting to think about 2027 CapEx because that's how I think about it, is when push comes to shove and I'm thinking about the valuation of NVIDIA, I'm basing it on what 2027 growth is going to be. And currently 2027 is about 12 to 15%, which is, I think, justifiable to some of these bigger valuations. So that's how I think about it. So I'm very happy as long as the valuations don't get too extended and there's still good growth rates. Now, history would tell you that I'm going to make that there's always digestion in cloud and data center capex, and so one of those digestion periods is going to come at some point. You know, talk to Jensen, he says there's no way there's going to be that kind of correction in the next 2 years. But who's to say? So those corrections are hard to spot. But everybody always remembers bubbles as the ones that burst, right? But the smartphone market went through huge growth between 2007 and 2015, right? Mm-hmm. Was there a bubble? No.
BlackBerry disappeared, though.
BlackBerry did disappear.
And Nokia. Right?
The cloud has gone from 0% penetration to what, 30% penetration? Mm-hmm. Has there been a bubble in cloud?
No.
So it's very possible that, assuming that investors stay vigilant and they don't get over the top, and reality and expectations track reasonably well, there is a possibility that AI slows down without there being a crash. Right, and that's how I think about it. Is it could just be the train slows down a little bit, and everybody goes, "Yeah, okay, fair enough." Now, when things do slow down and the second derivative of growth, those there are a whole load of investors that will get off the train very, very quickly, right? But
and there's been an element of that in the last 2 weeks in some of the more speculative names.
Of course, yeah. And we face a very interesting thing, because one of the things I didn't talk about is that unprofitable tech has massively outperformed traditional tech. And I'm faced as an investor in tech with the question, do we chase that? And my answer would be no, we don't. We invest in companies that, even if AI went away tomorrow, would still have good businesses, you know, with the possible exception of NVIDIA. You know, AI is very important.
NVIDIA would go back to Bitcoin mining again.
Well, it would probably go on to robotics, actually, and it would probably go on to autonomous driving, and it would probably go on to putting... It's interesting, that Nokia announcement that NVIDIA had, where they're looking to put their processors into the radio access network. So he really genuinely believes that there's a replatforming or a compute can lots of areas of compute can benefit from GPUs. But the point, just quickly, is if AI disappears for Microsoft, Microsoft's still got a very good business, most of which is playing on subscription anyway, right? And Meta does too, and so on and so forth.
Do you think the AI build out is more similar to cloud than it is to .com?
I think it's a hybrid of the two. But the point I'm trying to make is everybody's very focused on 99 and that bubble, right? Whereas actually there have been growths or let's call them waves, because that's how I like to think about it. My job as a tech investor is to spot the wave coming over the horizon, work out how big the wave is, get on the wave, ride the wave, and then if it gets into, get off the wave, right? Mm-hmm. And that's happened with smartphones, right? We were big investors in Apple from 2009, 10, as smartphones were growing, and then we've become, in the last 5-10 years, we've become less keen on it, right? Because it's no longer, and you know, look at all the things we use. There was a time when a touchpad on a PC was a really big deal, right? Now it's commodity, right? And AI, I have no doubt, there are elements of AI that will continue to be commodity, because that's just how tech works.
Yeah.
But we'll now be thinking about something else. We'll be, to use my analogy, looking for the next wave.
And NVIDIA report off-cycle, don't they? So they've not reported results yet.
Now they're 19th.
The 19th. So I better put that on my calendar in case Mrs. Raymond's listening. We need to clear the diary that evening. and then aside from NVIDIA, what were your sort of takeaways on the sort of big names? Do you want to, why don't we start with the non-AI play? What about Apple? What were your thoughts on Apple results?
Apple had a better set of numbers than people were expecting generally, because the 17 is a better phone than most people had thought it was. Or let me put it another way, people whose phones were 5 years old were waiting for it to come out and therefore bought one. But for me, I'm not going to buy a new iPhone until they've really sorted Apple Intelligence, which is putting AI into Siri, because I really see the benefit of that.
And there's some news around that, potentially with Google, is that right?
Yeah, so potentially they're going to use Gemini for that. You know, Google is very, very, the thing Apple is most concerned about is not breaking its 96% customer retention. And the way that you break that retention rate is by making a bad product.
Yeah.
So they're very focused on that product.
4% of people don't renew their iPhones. Who knew? What's wrong with them?
Yeah, it's probably even higher. It's probably even higher than that, right?
You wouldn't go to a Google phone.
I mean, this is the problem, isn't it?
I was actually looking at doing it this time, and then what threw me was the iPad connectivity.
So this is the really interesting thing about OpenAI, because remember, they've just bought Jony Ive's company, right? So Jony Ive, the designer of the iPhone and various other products. What does a hardware device from OpenAI look like? Right? That's kind of an interesting idea. Because if I'm interested, the reason I want to buy a new iPhone is because of the AI. Would I switch from Apple to
an OpenAI type
device?
No, there's a thought.
And most importantly, what's the platform that runs on? You know, because tech companies in Silicon Valley are obsessed by being a platform company. Mark Zuckerberg is not a platform company. He is an app company. And there's a lot of benefit or negative. He doesn't get a lot of benefit. You know, he can basically get, as he was back in 2022, get shoved off or get his business model seriously disrupted by Apple saying, sorry, you can't share data between apps anymore. Privacy. Being a platform company is like the holy grail of Silicon Valley.
Which is where WeChat, Tencent are, right?
Super apps, but really it's an operating system. That's right.
And the stock, Apple's perked up a little bit, isn't it? Having been the sort of laggard, it's now one of the...
Yeah, that's Apple. The iPhone was better than people had been expecting. China was a bit weaker. The App Store was a bit better. And again, the Google DOJ trial potentially puts under threat some of the revenues. I think it was 200 billion. That's a big number. 20 billion.
20 billion. 20 billion. Yeah.
Thank you. These CapEx numbers get me. So 20 billion. There was no sign of any slowdown in that yet. So we'll see whether there's any slowdown in that. And then the other thing is, remember the dispute with Epic Games around the amount that's paid as a royalty for App Store use, which is currently 30%.
Yeah.
There's potential that Epic Games read out from the courts basically means that number could come under threat as well. So, and App Store is a big part of the the services business in Apple.
So just to remind the listeners, if I have an app and I put it in the App Store and I sell anything through the app, 30% of what I sell goes to Apple.
Correct.
Yeah, it's what they call a racket in the olden days.
You might think that. I couldn't
possibly licensing comment. Fee or whatever
yeah,
it might
yeah,
be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But there is a little bit of quality assurance that goes on and gives developers a huge network effect pretty much immediately. Yeah, you're dead right. And exposure to the top 30% of wealthiest people in the world.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere that if AirPods was its own separate business...
There are so many stats like this.
It would be the largest company in the
FTSE. Yeah, there are so... Of course, yeah. There's so many stats like that.
I think it's fantastic.
Yes, but the point is, it couldn't be a standalone business because AirPods don't work without...
They do connect to Google phones.
Of course they do. Sometimes they connect to our laptops.
Yes, that drives me mad.
That's more our laptops than the AirPods.
You might think that.
No. And then what about Microsoft? Yeah, they're sort of...
Yeah, look, Microsoft was fine. I mean, look, Microsoft is caught a little bit between...
It's been a bit weak, hasn't it?
Yeah, Microsoft? So I think the narrative there is, one, they are less exposed. They weren't the only game in town in terms of exposure to OpenAI. Right, because OpenAI has been, as I say, been growing up, doing other deals with other people and so forth. So you can play OpenAI in other ways. People are now sort of thinking 40% for Azure growth is pretty achievable, assuming they can get the supply constraints in check. So look, I think Microsoft's been the slightly disappointing one, but then. The other issue, if you're a really long-term investor, is all the stuff. It's hard. Microsoft is also a software company as well as an operating system company. So all those things I said about software earlier also apply to Microsoft. Mm. Could OpenAI be disrupt Microsoft as well? And so all of that's led to a bit of a multiple contraction. So I think earnings probably went up and the multiple went down.
We've got. I'm not going to put this up. We're a chart light today, but. The Microsoft 12-month forward PE, according to DataStream on IBES data, is under 29 times.
Yeah, so it would have gone from 34 to 29.
Yeah, so that's quite a big D rating, isn't it? Yeah. And 29 times is pretty much the middle of the range for the last 5 years. So to come back to the point about the bubble, we might just throw a few of these in, but none of these stocks are any more expensive than they have been for much of the last 5 years, right?
No, that's absolutely right. We can talk about valuation a lot, but ultimately... The Mag 6
X Tesla.
Trade at 27 times, but for 17% growth.
27 times for 17% growth.
That's right. So a peg of 1.5, 1.6. So I don't think that's particularly expensive. And also, if you look at it relative to the market, I think it's very justifiable.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw that UBS strategy note I sent through, that they make an interesting point on, it's their first bullet point on valuations, which is, I think, taking five different approaches, the PE in a bubble typically rises between 45 times to 73 times. And currently the Mag 6 is on under 35 times.
Yeah.
So there's, it is still, I'm going to use my words carefully, rational, I think.
Yeah.
At the moment, the market's not
irrational.
It's not. It's a better way of putting it. Yeah. It's not irrational.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at other bubbles, right? Mm. Nifty 50 peak earning peak multiple 45 times. Mm-hmm. 1999 peak multiple 60 times.
Yeah.
Japan peak multiple 72 times. Right. Yeah. The difference between
Ben, I just hope it. I just hope this bubble goes to 50 times because
it'd be quite fun.
It would be fun. Yeah. I mean, clients would make a lot of money. It's just, it's up to you, Ben, to tell us when to sell it.
No, absolutely not. That is exactly not what I want, right? We were talking about this in the lift. What you want is them to deliver 15, CapEx growth next year is going to be, 27, it's going to be 15% growth, right? You want NVIDIA to do a bit better than that because there's more kit of theirs going into this CapEx, so it's the 20, right?
Yep.
And you want them to hold their multiple. Guess how much money we make every year? If their earnings go up 20% and they hold their rating, guess how much money? It's like...
Sounds a lot like 20% to me.
Genius. Not just a pretty face, are you?
I know.
And then talk to me about Meta, because that was perhaps one more interesting set of results, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Meta produced one of the best, in fact, it did produce the best revenue growth In fact, what were they, 26%? And they guided to sort of the high end of the range is 22, right? Mm-hmm. So that is very good compared to compared to Google, the other big digital advertising player, at 15%. So the revenue is doing well. The problem, and this is certainly true at Amazon a little bit, and it's also true at Google, is, you know, they are run by founders. And so one of the things that's always surprised me is most businesses, you know, their costs roughly correlate to their top lines. You know, we are going to grow OPEX at, you know, it's 30% of our revenue. Mm. There is very little correlation between Meta's top line and their bottom line. When they feel like investing, they go for it, right? And they're such a profitable business anyway, they can move that around. And so what people are concerned about with Meta is that back in 2021, 22, they did this big investment that actually paid off because they were being disrupted by Apple and by TikTok as well. And that paid huge dividends for them because, again, going back to what I said, they've been able to deliver better service for customers, better service for advertisers by losing AI. ITV been
top top
investing, but it's not to defend their position. It's just to advance the potential total addressable market. But they have probably saw the headlines around them recruiting this very expensive team to head up the Llama initiative. They're giving a lot more of that capex to the Llama team, and so that has a certain level of uncertainty with it. And so you have to either back Mark Zuckerberg or not.
Yeah.
But the problem is, in the meantime, potentially, I think earnings numbers didn't go down actually very much, but you're not necessarily going to get paid profits because the costs are going to go up. So you know, that's the issue with Meta. But a bit like Amazon, Meta goes through what I would call sowing and then harvesting periods.
Yeah, but they're not. Those periods are not concurrent.
You typically have sort of 2 years of investing and then 2 years of harvesting.
Interesting, Amazon's feels like it's coming out the other side of the...
I mean, remember, sowing. Amazon, out of COVID, doubled their footprint. Yeah, yeah. Remember, they doubled it, right? And that was, by their own admission, a mistake.
Yep. Mm.
But it hasn't stopped them. Like, they've filled that capacity. And this is kind of my point around... Satya Nadella always talks about the fungibility of your capex, right? If this turns out, it turns out that they can't use it for X, they'll use it for Y, right?
Yeah.
And that's, in Amazon's case, they've just been able to grow into it, essentially. That's what I'm always looking for is, you know, that fungibility or that alternative use that they've got in their footprint.
I mean, Meta was marked down, wasn't it? And there was an element of, oh, Zuckerberg's gone crazy again. He's blowing a load of money, a la 2021, 22 with the Metaverse thing. Come back to Hughes's point, it does sort of show that the market is not irrational because the market was like, oh, no, we don't like the look of this. And gave him a bloody nose isn't quite the right.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Actually, Meta, and this is one of the problems with sentiment as well, though. Like, Meta and Google have swapped multiples, right?
Yeah,
Meta was on 25 times and has gone to 20.
Should be on your screen now.
Very good. Meta was on 25 times and has gone to 20, and Google was actually on 18 times and has gone to 25, right? So, it's a little bit of this AI winner, AI, simplistically, are you an AI winner? Yes, you can have a 25 multiple. Yeah. Are you an AI loser? We don't know what your multiple is. And this is extended out, and this is one of the interesting things, this is extended outside of tech as well, right? There are plenty of companies, you guys can name them, that are... been deemed AI losers. And it's an incredibly hard thing to disprove unless you say, no, I'm an AI winner and I show an acceleration from AI. Back to my point earlier.
Again, if we're talking about multiples, you know, we're talking about 18 and 25 times earnings. That's not bubble territory. My bigger question is, are the earnings that are being generated... is that where the
sustainable
bubble is? Are those earnings sustainable?
You're always going to get social media companies or digital advertising companies that trade at a discount to Microsoft simply because of the nature of earnings. And you could either think about it in terms
just
of
more cyclical.
No, it's more about terminal value. Like, Microsoft's probably going to be around forever. It's a bit like Coca-Cola. Like, versus there is a lot of disruption in media. This is worth talking about, absolutely. We don't have any recommendations in UK media because it is the poster child for disruption, right? WPP.
The advertising agency.
Yeah,
Don Draper's group.
Put a chart of WPP up. It's absolutely horrendous.
We don't upset this from the beginning.
I can remember when TV was regional, like Granada.
I thought you were going to say I remember when it's black and white.
You know, Granada, Anglia, Thames, right? Then ITV formed to form a national television. Television is now global, right? And Netflix was the first to really realize that. And that's very hard to beat. For one very simple reason, like if you can make, I don't follow this stat very well, but if you can make television for $1 million an hour, right? That's hard to compete with. I mean, ITV, I don't think ITV have ever made something for $1 million an hour, right? You know what, bin. That was definitely not $1 million an hour, unless Ted Rogers was paid more. I think. Well, that's an old reference.
Lost on me. So Google were pretty decent.
Google was good, and it they are trying to disprove this narrative.
Yeah.
So the things that were good in that search was fine. YouTube was fine.
YouTube has more viewership than Netflix, isn't that right?
I mean, it
does. Higher share of TV.
Of course it does, because it's free mostly. Yeah, but they would always, Netflix would, I think it's 800 million. Netflix would always point you to that as their addressable market, actually. And then the other one that's very interesting is GCP, their compute business, is actually doing pretty well. That was, I think, almost as high as Azure, but it's taking business off AWS. And actually, technically, you should. The GCP, the cloud revenue, is slightly faster because Google Suite, which is like Google Docs and all of that stuff, is in there. And that generally grows slower than the cloud business. So actually it's going slightly faster than the reported number. That's quite interesting just because, you know, they've become a credible third alternative. GCP used to get a bit laughed at. And also bear in mind that Google. Oh, and also they did a deal with OpenAI as well, right? So they've diversified their customer base. They've got good product. So, you know, it's becoming quite credible. And then finally, Waymo. There we go.
About to say. Oh, we go. I was on the tip of my tongue.
So Waymo, not only doing trials in US cities, lots of US cities, but Tokyo and London.
London, here we come.
2026.
Well, that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
We can get a little video, can't we? Put it out like we did last time Ben was here.
So, yeah, that was going back to Arizona in a month's time, three weeks' time, for another conference. And Waymo will be the first and last thing I take.
Yeah,
They're all over LA.
Yeah.
It's they're using them.
Did you take one?
We didn't because we weren't staying in LA. So the reason we went was my wife's got some family in Laguna Beach, so we stayed near there, so it was good. But they're using Waymo for all the... But LA 26 for all the athletes and things moving all around. Yeah.
Oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah. I think it's still only in the books at 50 billion, right? What's the market cap of Google? 2.6, 3?
Probably 3.
3, yeah.
Yeah. Return on capital employed in that business? Because it's a CapEx heavy bit. Like, you've got to buy a lot of kit. Those cars are $250,000
each. I haven't seen the numbers, actually.
Well, they wouldn't disclose them, would they?
No, but the thing that is interesting, they've released some stats on driver safety.
Yeah.
And those are very impressive. Yeah. Like, statistically, you know, if I have, being a logical dad, if I have the choice between putting my kids in a Uber or a Waymo, I'll take the Waymo.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's going to be the... I mean, that's going to be an interesting talking point when driverless cars become more...
With electric vehicles. You know, I was saying 10, 12 years ago, that electric vehicles could become a thing. Now, they've gone through a bit of a hype cycle and maybe they're not everything that... they're not 100% of the market, but I don't think we ever said that. But they are a very interesting technology. Now, there will be a whole load of, you know, people waving well, I was going to say red flags, right? But actually, remember
that's what they used to be. Yeah,
remember
yeah,
when
yeah.
cars started, right? Yep. There were people with red flags, right? Mm-hmm. That is just it's just because I've done this job so long. It's just a natural thing that you see. Like people always turkeys don't vote for Christmas. You know, you're going to see people who drive conventional cars or are conventional taxi drivers up in arms about it.
Mm.
Sorry, that's how the world works.
It's amazing. Progress. It's amazing they're testing them in London.
I mean, it is because
I just wouldn't have thought there's. I just would have thought it's too cramped. But then actually, if you compare it to LA,
well, they're
doing, I mean, LA's even worse.
They're doing New York before that, right? Right, the interesting thing is that they have cherry-picked. They start in San Francisco.
Yeah,
then they've cherry-picked grid systems and good weather, right? And that's the thing that's the real test, right? So New York's going to be an interesting test, mainly for the weather and
totally.
the business. Yeah. But then... And the thing that's important as well, remember, a Waymo has cameras like the Tesla, but it also has radar and LIDAR.
What does LIDAR stand for?
It's light radar.
Right.
I can't remember what radar stands for. I should know
nor
that.
Do I.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, there you go. Bouncing light off an object. In fact, it's what your phone uses. They use LIDAR. You know, it does face recognition. Mm. That's a little LIDAR sensor.
Is that right?
Yeah. They normally use a thing called time of flight. LIDAR sensor. When that was introduced into the iPhone, huge bubble, like how do I get exposure to this, how do I get exposure to that, blah blah blah, you know. Now it's just table stakes. And that's true of all tech innovation, I'm afraid.
Light detection and ranging.
Well done.
Laser imaging detection and ranging.
Is somebody's AI saying something different?
It's the same AI. It's giving us two different answers. Yeah. So,
oh, there you go.
Thanks.
We should have Wikipedia. Maybe we should test it on Gemini instead of Copilot.
We haven't got the license for that. Any more thoughts on earnings season? What about the Asian players?
I mean, look, the each way bet in all of this stuff is TSMC, right? Yeah. Because, AMD is taking share from NVIDIA, which I think they will. Or Broadcom, you know, what are we talking about? Do I buy a GPU or do I buy a custom ASIC? By TSMC, it doesn't really matter because they make all of them, right? So that's the real each way bet. There's been a lot of action in memory as well. All of this AI compute requires four types of storage, actually. So most basically, you need to use hard disk drives to store all the data. Or if you're really smart, you start using flash drives. All our computers no longer have hard disk drives. They have flash drives. So that's what's called NAND, NAND flash. All of the processors either require DRAM, which our computers have all got, or if you're a really, really high-powered AI computer, you need high bandwidth memory, right? And so there's been a lot of action in there as well. So SK Hynix, which is a Korean company, I think is up 203% year to date. Has been the leader in HBM. Micron is a good chart, isn't it? Micron is the number two, and that shot stock is up 120. I looked at that last week, so it's probably completely inaccurate. Up 150, I think, something like that, Micron year to date.
Yep.
And then you've got Samsung, which was the leader in DRAM, but has sort of missed a trick technologically getting approval for its HBM product. That's up only 70, 80%.
Wow. I'll tell you what, semis are ripping today.
That's a double.
Yeah.
AMD up 6. Yeah. Micron up 7. Yeah.
Well, they were weak. They were weak on Friday, Thursday and Friday. And you've also got AMD who've got a Capital Markets Day Tuesday, which is worth talking about. So they have got four businesses, really, but people only really care about the GPU business. Right. So they've got the PC business. The CPU business where they compete with Intel. So that is laptops, but mainly it's servers. So when you're building a data center, you need to have servers. They need to have GPUs in them, but they also need to have CPUs in them to sort of control and do lots of orchestration and lots of more traditional tasks. So actually, that's been the thing that's really significant in AMD's results, the CPU business. Then you've also got Xbox and PlayStation. They make those processors. Then you've got a business called Xilinx, which is industrial. But the one that people really care about is the GPU business for AMD, which is the one where they compete with NVIDIA. And they have a product roadmap, but it's very hard to compete with NVIDIA unless you get the backing of some big customers. And they'd got Microsoft as a customer, they got Meta as a customer, but really they were a sort of a plan B.
Mm.
Then they, 6 weeks ago, you can tell me, Husey, you actually notified me of when the announcement came out. They signed a deal with OpenAI, and that is very significant because it validates their roadmap and also potentially helps them improve the software. Because remember, NVIDIA has had their software operating system, CUDA, which is very easy to use and kind of an industry standard. The real pushback for using an AMD processor for AI training or inference was that there wasn't a software stack. And that's called ROCm, R-O-C-M. And that wasn't very well developed. Now, it looks like OpenAI have been working with AMD on that and also potentially using AI to code it faster as well.
Yeah.
And so that really gives validation to that. So what we can expect from the Capital Markets Day is potentially some other customers. The one that's missing from AMD's roster is Amazon. Amazon may choose to do it on Tuesday, or they may wait until the next reInvent conference, which is in early December. But that would be a good thing because it's further validation. And then the other thing that may happen, may not, I know the guys at the IR guys very well at AMD, they may try and put out some kind of earnings forecast for the future. Okay. Because one of the things that happened in that OpenAI deal is it effectively gives OpenAI warrants, an equity issue in AMD stock. Mm-hmm. If all of that works, actually it's very interesting, OpenAI can pay for the CapEx for that build through the issue of through the exercise of these warrants. The highest warrant exercise price in 2030 is for $600, right? And the AMD price today is $245
today.
Oh, so, that was a good guess. Yeah. So that is a significant upside.
Yeah.
Does AMD make an attempt at justifying that $600 price target or warrant price, sorry, by giving us an earnings number? We shall see. I'll be dialed in. It probably won't be as exciting as people think, principally because previous IR have done a bad job at managing expectations.
Yeah,
remember, beat and raise is the name of the game.
Yeah.
That means slightly sandbag your numbers.
Yeah.
Mm. And when I asked you, when I said about the AMD OpenAI deal, I said, is it a surprise? And you said no, because Sam Altman had been at previous Capital Market Days talking to investors, and so from your point of view, you expected that at some point.
Yeah,
because, and that was in the buy case.
It's a nice extra. The thing was that Sam Altman has gone from a guy who just runs OpenAI to kingmaker. You know what I mean? He's literally been like, if the two people that people listen to are Jensen and Sam Altman now. Because he's going out and sort of anointing people he wants to work with.
Mm.
And he wasn't that when he was on stage with AMD. Or actually, it wasn't him, it was people from OpenAI. But yeah. The other thing that's important about the AMD story is, as long as they have a credible product, people want to work with them because they don't want to be sole source.
Yeah. Totally.
Right? Yeah. That's the basics of it. You don't need to be game theory expert to work out that two sources is better, particularly given the history of Cisco or Intel.
Interesting. Good. We're going to call it a day, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on, but we've probably done our time, haven't we?
Yeah. Let Ben go home.
Yeah, look, one final comment I think it's worth saying.
Mm.
You know, we've been sort of, we haven't been dismissive of an AI bubble, but I think it's important. My job is signal versus noise, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some things that are noise and there are things that are signal. But the things I really watch are any downturn in IT spending, any downturn in digital advertising, any downturn in that CapEx spending as well, right? And then the other things that we haven't talked about, you know, relative growth, is tech still going to grow faster than the rest of the market to justify that multiple? And then finally, the let's remember, tech is a long duration asset. Mm. Therefore, the direction of interest rates is very important. Yeah. Downward is better than upward. Yep. Yeah. And remember, in 2000, mm-hmm. rates were going up.
7%
rates were going up. Yeah. Right. So you know this. I can talk about tech all day, but I don't live. Try not to live in a goldfish bowl. Mm. You're thinking like a global asset allocator. Mm. Very simply, if rates are going down and the economy looks good, you want to buy a good beta or longer duration assets. Tech is one of those.
Where the growth is, and the growth continues to come through, and the results season essentially means that there's no sign of that train slowing down. If anything, continues to accelerate.
We're not heavily overweight. We are in line to tech, and we're selective within tech, and that is very important. Mm. But we are not, let's panic and jump off this train as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Let's be very cognizant of the direction the train is traveling and the and what we're getting from it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Lovely job.
Easy. Anything else?
No, we've I think we're close to an hour apparently, so it'd be best to end it.
Crikey. Good. All right then. Well, thank you, Ben. Thank you, Yeezy, for coming along. Thanks to everyone for watching and listening today. I hope you enjoy. Any questions, let me know on jonathan.raymond@courtachievit.com, and we'll see you next time. Thanks very much.